All things considered, I'm Dave Lawrence, and they call me Supermensch, a backstage pass to the amazing worlds of film, food, and rock and roll. It's Shep Gordon who put this out. Now, that name may be new to you, may not be. He's known as manager of Alice Cooper to many, the guy Mike Myers directed a documentary about to others, restaurant owner, talent manager, Hollywood film agent, producer, and our guest right now here at Hawaii Public Radio.
Aloha.
Aloha. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Quite an interesting read, Shep. One thing that I think is a good starting point, it features this young guy from the East Coast after a brief first gig at a juvenile hall for incarcerated teens. Tell us what you can remember of that story that you share at the pool.
I had just come from a jail, Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall, working for one day as a probation officer. And it was the pharmaceutical psychedelic era. I participated, checked into a motel, heard a girl screaming. And because I had come from a jail, I guess something in my brain said rape. And I saw these two bodies around the pool, and I went and separated them. And the girl punched me. They were actually making love. Wasn't my greatest moment. And when I went in the morning down to the pool, this girl called me over, and it was Janis Joplin. That was a girl. And she was with Jimi Hendrix and the Chambers Brothers. And I was dealing in pharmaceuticals that weren't legal. They were my target audience.
Client meets customer.
Client meets customer. It was commerce at its finest.
Right.
They said to me, what do you do for a living? And I said, well, this is sort of what I do. And they said, are you Jewish? I said, yeah, you should be a manager. And they introduced me to Alice Cooper. And the journey began. And it's been 47 years later, and it's just been a remarkable relationship.
This is you in the book. At just about the same time, someone at the Landmark, maybe Jimi Hendrix, said to Lester Chambers of the Chambers Brothers, quote, don't you have that band of freaks from Phoenix living in your basement in Watts? Why don't you tell them you found these two Jewish guys and they'd like to represent them? That was Alice Cooper and the band.
They'd been living in the basement of Lester Chambers. They played the Lenny Brucemas event, and the manager of the place said, where are you staying tonight? And they said, in their cars, and he hooked them up with Lester, and Lester let them stay there.
And now I know why on the Alice Cooper radio show he plays the Chambers Brothers so
often. All the time, absolutely.
It's amazing how you can trace the relationship of Alice Cooper and Joe Perry all the way back to that Brown Mansion house in New England, and how those guys today are the Hollywood vampires together.
Alice had just gotten out of rehab. Joe Perry had just gotten out of rehab. I had a house upstate New York that I didn't tell them, but people had told me was haunted. They went up there right out of rehab to write songs, and they said at like 2 o'clock in the morning, they got freaked out, and both of them left and went to a motel.
That's where that relationship began.
That's where it started.
All these years later, talking about coming full circle.
Yeah. Really came back through Johnny Depp. It was Johnny we brought in, and Joe Perry was living up at Johnny Depp's house while we were recording. And he came in, he said, what are you doing? We told him, he said, oh man, I want to be part of this. He happened to walk in the day Paul McCartney was recording, so who wouldn't want to be part of it?
Right. But
McCartney did one of the songs on the Hollywood Vampire albums. To see Johnny Depp, Alice Cooper, and Joe Perry with their mouth wide open, hitting each other, going, holy shit, that's Paul McCartney recording. And on our record,
Alice ends up being neighbors with Groucho Marx. Explain how you ended up getting to work with him.
Alice had called me up and said that he was watching TV in bed with Groucho Marx the night before. And I said, you got to invite me. This is like Groucho Marx, one of my heroes. A couple of nights later, I went over and Alice and Groucho are in bed. They both had on Mickey Mouse ears. Both said Groucho. They were both Grouchos. He had doubles. Turned out he was having some financial problems. So they asked me if I would help him with it. And we ended up getting the TV show put back on the air, You Bet Your Life, and did an album with A&M. At Carnegie Hall, I think that was his last piece of product. But he was fantastic. If there are other people in the room, he'd sort of look at me and he'd go, you Shep? I go, yeah, graduate. My manager, Shep? And I say, yeah. Funny, you don't look like a crook.
Those dinner get-togethers sound
dinner
pretty nice.
Amazing. You'd have dinner up at his house, and you had to perform after dinner if you ate there. And you had to perform something that you didn't do. The house band, if you call it a house band, the accompaniments were Marvin Hamlisch was a piano player, Jeff Bridges on guitar, Bud Cort, great young actor from Harold and Maude. I would get up and start reading my contract, you know, where to for the Groucho Marx estate, and I'd get a big arpeggio from Marvin, like, boo, boo, you know, and Groucho would say, get out of here.
Special get-togethers, and there are just so many, and they call me Supermensch. The Bizarre Hologram Project. Talk about getting to know the Dolly, or Salvador. Dolly.
Salvador Dali was one of our heroes for Alice and the band. And he certainly represented shock rock at its most extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Someone had come to us with this new way of doing photography called the hologram. And it seemed to fit Alice's thing. So we said, maybe that's our way into Dali. So we ended up in a meeting at the St. Regis Hotel in New York to meet Salvador Dali. And it was my partner, Joseph, myself, and Alice. He had a lady in his life. I don't know if it was his wife, but very powerful force in his life. Gala, she's probably 6 feet tall. She was dressed all in black with a scarf wrapped around her head. You could only see her face. And four or five boys dressed in white, young boys. And they came to the table, and she introduced herself, and she said, the Dalai will be down soon. You have to refer to him as the Dalai, and you can't discuss business with him. I will go and talk business later.
It's just a meet and greet kind of thing.
It's a meet and greet. So the Dalai comes downstairs, and we're all somewhere between nervous and hysterical. And he's wearing an artist jacket, and she has a cup of hot water on the table. And he comes, and he doesn't say a word, and he takes a jar of honey out of one pocket and opens it up very slowly, holds it over the teacup, and pours the honey in out of the other pocket, takes out a scissor, and cuts the honey in midair. We ended up doing the project with the Dalai. He called me Mr. Blemley. I have no idea why. And he was wonderful to work with and very professional. He would take us to Trader Vic's. Always ate at Trader Vic's with him. Every time he would sign a napkin.
Right, to pay for the meal.
To pay for the meal, yeah. And tell us his friend Picasso, so silly.
Get a tablecloth.
He'd get a tablecloth for just coffee.
What a racket, huh? To be able to do that wherever you go. As a manager, yeah. You must have been like, bing,
bing.
Light goes off. Yep. Crazy. The stories are just, it's just one of those. It's like a BCN moment here for me.
BC and Mark Parento. Oh, my God. Love Mark.
You know he passed.
Yeah.
And you know Charles lives on your island.
Yeah.
Wow, what a great tribute to him, though, that you mentioned him on your own. Says a lot. That was my mentor.
Mark gave us our first spin at BCN in Boston. I went up and psychedelicized the studio, and Alice Cooper's first spin was Mark Vareno at BCN.
First time I ever met Alice was when Alice was doing a Spooky World residency in 96, and we did a sing-along. I'm elected. It was the election year in the studio with Mark.
Yeah, so Mark was a great friend and real big part of Alice's career.
It's huge. Well, it's wonderful that you bring him up. It wouldn't be right to not also mention some of the other cats. Luther comes to mind, Luther Vandross. There's a great story. He's doing 5 sold-out shows at Madison Square Garden with Anita Baker.
Okay.
You got to tell the Clay to Cold Cuts story. So,
Luther was a bit of a diva. Anita Baker, very much a diva. She had just won a bunch of Grammys. Luther hadn't, so there was a little bit of unspoken tension to begin with.
Mm.
Put a tour together, I think a 40-city tour, Madison Square Garden, sold out 5 shows. I send her a deli tray congratulating her on the sellout. She was booked by Associated Booking. Associated Booking was owned by Al Capone, and it booked Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, all the big jazz acts. And the guy who ran it was Oscar Cohn, who sort of took me under his wing when I started. We'd have lunch with Henny Youngman and Shecky Greens and, you know, Buddy Hackett. And he was the one who called me up for Anita's tour, and Luther said yes, and we have dinner before the show, first night at Madison Square Garden. We walk into the garden together. He says to me, have you ever met Anita? I say, no. He says, let me introduce you. So we're in one of those corridors where there's dressing room doors on every side. And a door opens, and it's Anita Baker in a bathrobe holding my tray.
It's a tray of deli cuts.
Tray, yeah.
Plastic wrap tray.
Plastic wrap, little toothpicks in it.
Sure.
And coleslaw. And, oh, Anita, Oscar says. And as she says, oh, Anita, Anita says, do you know this guy, Shep Gordon? And I said, oh, yeah, I'm just bringing him in to meet you. And she says, you're him? And she takes the tray and throws it in my face and starts screaming, who the hell do you think I am that I'm going to accept something wrapped in goddamn plastic? You think I take things wrapped in plastic? What do you think I am, like the maid at this place? And just went off. Well, Luther comes walking by as the coleslaw is dripping down my face and says, what happened? And I know that if he finds out what happened, just because she got the Grammys, not because I have the tray,
right,
something's going to happen.
Right.
So I try and downplay it, but he finds out, and he says, I'm going home. I won't perform with her. And if I ever hear her voice again, there's no more shows. And I know Luther means it, and he goes home, and there's no show. So I build a wall the next day, plywood wall between, down the corridor, her dressing room on one. So she walks down to go on stage, starts knocking on the wood. Hey, Luther, you hear me? I hear you don't want to hear me. Can you hear me through here? Second night's canceled. So then I had to start building cement walls.
Unbelievable.
And we built cement walls. These cement walls going up at like the Los Angeles Coliseum. Coming down in one day.
To salvage the tour.
To salvage the tour, yeah.
A lot of great stories from you. As we go to wrap it up, there's a element of your life we haven't really mentioned much of, film. And one of the great stories in this book, Chris Blackwell, he leads you to Robert Palmer. There's also a much more incredible story, though, of what Chris said to you when trying to buy out your film company, Island Alive. Some of these reality checks of what this business is really like.
So the incident that Dave's talking about is I needed to get something done for one of my artists, and it involved getting $1 million. It was pointed out to me that I could get it done by doing business with a fellow named Chris Blackwell who owned Island Records. I had avoided Chris Blackwell my entire career because of his reputation, and I put weight in reputations. They usually have some reason. But I needed to do this, so I made the deal with him, and we became friends, I thought. And I think we did. And he started staying at my house. And I went down to Jamaica and stayed at his house. And an amazing guy, brilliant, started Island Records. But in the back of my mind, I always knew everyone had told me that Rolling Stone had called him the baby face killer. Ahmet Erdogan had said, I'd give anybody $1 million who could find the heartbeat in him. So I knew that there was something wrong. Out of this $1 million, I ended up building a very successful company called Island Alive. That wasn't economically gigantically successful, but we did Stop Making Sense. Koyaanis Kotsi won an Academy Award for Kiss of the Spider Woman, Academy Award for Trip to Bountiful, did the Alan Rudolph movies, won the Cannes Film Festival many times. And luckily for us, one of the investment bankers, Merrill Lynch, decided to put some money in the film business and decided we were the company they wanted to put the money in. We got an offer for a lot of money. Chris Blackwell was a partner. He had put in the first $1 million. He had a lot of rights. So he was staying at the house. So I joyously said, I'm going to bring this guy up. I'm going to blow your mind. The guy made the offer. Chris asked him to leave the room. And Chris said, basically, you know, I'm really sorry, but this is what I do. You know, when I perceive a situation where I can take advantage, I take advantage. I know the other person owning the company needs cash for a mortgage. So I'm going to give you basically nothing. I think it was $250,000, which is not nothing, but in terms of this deal, and take all your stock, or I'm going to shut the company down the next day. And I left it up to the third party, and Carolyn Pfeiffer, who was my partner, but Chris Blackwell was the godfather of her daughter.
So put her in a weird spot.
So they were very close, right. Even though she worked for me, and she was the woman who was the mother of the baby on $1 billion babies that Alice was holding, and that baby had died a crib death. So she came to work for me, but she chose Chris for the godfather, so very close. And she had a mortgage payment, and he left the room, and she said, you know, f*** him. My honor's more important than my house. And he walked back in, and that was the last time I saw him, and he disbanded the company the next day.
And that was, I love what you said to him. You got 5 minutes.
Yeah, you have 5 minutes. Get a cab, get packed, get out of my f***ing house.
And you can wait outside for the cab.
Yeah, and you can wait outside for the cab. When I look back at it now, I probably would have reacted differently if I had the maturity I have now. Like I never said to him, is this a negotiation? Which it may have been in his brain. Never, it wasn't even, it's like, get out of here right now. It's done. You want it over, it's over.
It's a story that you can read in They Call Me Supermensch, Backstage Pass to the Amazing Worlds of Film, Food, and Rock and Roll. Shep Gordon, an incredible storyteller, an incredible book, incredible guy. Here on All Things Considered, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, my very special guest. And I hope you have enjoyed picking
That was fun. Really fun.
Through this today.
Yeah, really fun.
Someday you have to connect us with Alice. Love to have
Absolutely.
Him on the show, too.
He's here Christmas and New Year's.
Well, maybe we'll do a thing with him. Right. But thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you. Aloha. It's Shep Gordon. You may know me as Alice Cooper's manager, or the guy from Supermensch, or as a part of our island community for decades. Well, you can also think of me as a supporter of my good friend Dave Lawrence.
Tell me, I'm so scared. Your little head.